Hey, Queer Fam Squad. Since we're between seasons of the Queer Family Podcast this month, I wanted to give you something to keep you company while we're getting season 23 ready. And it is coming, and it's going to be good. But these tea time episodes are just me and my friend Diani catching up about what's happening in our lives. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes it's messy, and sometimes, like today's conversation, it's a little more vulnerable. I originally thought about putting these behind the subscriber paywall right away, but honestly, that just didn't feel right. So for the rest of July, I'm making these public for everyone to enjoy. Then, starting in August, new Tea Time episodes will become a subscriber perk. Anyway, thanks for being here. Now let's spill some tea. Enjoy.
Love is on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Welcome to Tea Time with Jamie and Diani. We're back for yet another lesbianic sapphic conversation.
Yes, we are. And we have a good one today. I'm excited for this conversation because, Jamie, so let's say we touched on lesbian bed death a little bit in a previous episode of one of the Tea Time episodes because we were talking about me moving in with my girlfriend and like some of the fears that were coming up. And this was one of the things you mentioned. And we posted a clip about it on the social and people had thoughts and feelings.
People had some thoughts. And to be clear, I was giving you, Diani, advice as your elder. What do we call me? Your elder gay fairy auntie?
As my elder fairy queer godmother,
right?
Something like that.
Something like that. You know, because I've been around the block a few more times than you in life. I've been around on this earth. I just did the math, and I said that to you earlier. Almost 5 decades. So, which is like, I can't even believe that because I still feel 28. Like, to be real. So. But I've been here for 5 decades, so I have experienced some life. So I was giving you, life happens and you're going to have to roll with the punches in the relationship. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. So I asked you for some advice on it. You were sharing your honest take as someone who's been with your wife for almost 20 years now, mm-hmm. has lived together, has been through having children and all these things.
Cancer.
And so cancer and all of these life things. And then, like I said, we posted a clip about it on social and people had some opinions saying that, like, that never happened to them, that it's weird, all these things.
Oh, like, also, like, older people telling younger people that their relationship is going to go exactly how theirs did is just weird. And, like, I wasn't
saying
that.
Yeah, which was not the vibe at all. It was just, like, I asked Jamie for her personal experience and that's what I got.
Yeah.
And so we wanted this episode to be about lesbian bed death specifically. And I looked up a little bit of the history.
We're going to go
deep. There's also an article on AutoStraddle.
Isn't it AutoStraddle?
Sorry. AutoStraddle.
Yeah.
Speaking specifically
Elder Gant.
On this. So I'm so curious to kind of get into this a little bit. Mm-hmm. And like, I know you've got your take on lesbian bed death. You have your thoughts. So That's what we're getting into today.
And Diani has done research, which I never do. So we have a real treat here where we're going to actually learn the history of the term lesbian bed death, as I call now for short, LBD.
LBD.
LBD. Okay?
Should we just say that for now through the rest
from
of the
now
episode?
On, because, and then the algorithm, if we post any clips, maybe we'll let it air. Who knows? You know, you can't say lesbian too much on social media. They might ban us. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, a quick history.
All right, let's go.
Lesbian bed death, or LBD, is a term coined by sociologists Pepper Schwartz and Philip Blumstein in 1983 in a book called American Couples.
Interesting. I already have an issue. Why is a man?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, but also not to assume, because this could be, who knows, this could be a trans man. We don't know. This could be a member of the LGBTQIA community, but okay. Already have my what do you call, my antenna up? That's not the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. And that was kind of my initial reaction as well, of kind of like, I don't know how we feel about that. But
then it makes me think that the woman is a straight woman as well.
Yeah. So I can maybe pull up a little bit of history on both of these people, but for really quick, let me finish this. So it says, based on a survey, data suggested that lesbian couples reported having sex less frequently than heterosexual couples, couples or gay male couples. The term took on a life of its own, far beyond that research, like that original research. And why it stuck is it landed in a cultural moment where there was very little research on queer relationships at all. So this one study kind of outsized influence and kind of took over because there was no other research on queer couples.
Okay.
So it got picked up by mainstream media, worked its way into like pop culture, and became kind of one of those facts or
stereotypes.
Stereotypes that people kind of repeat without questioning where it came from. And it says by the 90s, it was basically accepted as wisdom, as truth, even within the lesbian communities, that long-term lesbian relationships were destined to go low or no sex.
Oh my God. This like,
and the problem
into my theory, Deanna. I'm dying to
okay,
to open
wait.
But no, but keep going.
So the problem with the original research is that it's like, this is where it gets interesting. It says the study had serious methodology issues. Mm-hmm. It defined sex in a very narrow, penetration-centered way mm-hmm. that mapped poorly onto how many lesbian couples actually have sex. So obviously, we're not having sex in the same way that hetero couples are. Obviously. So couples who were having plenty of physical intimacy just weren't counting that in the same way that the survey framed it. It also didn't account for quality versus frequency, relationship satisfaction, or the fact that many of the couples surveyed were older and had been together for decades. Later researchers also pointed out that the comparison to straight couples was itself skewed. Heterosexual couples often have sex more frequently early on and decline too, but nobody coined a term for that. Specifically,
Can I go into my whole
one last
theory?
Thing? One last
okay.
thing.
Oh my God.
One last thing.
Oh my God.
So the feminist and queer critique by the 90s and early 2000s, queer scholars and sex researchers started pushing back hard on this term, lesbian bed death. And the argument was essentially this framework centers male sexuality as the default and treats lesbian sexuality as a deficient by comparison. If frequency is the only metric and frequency is defined by male-coded understanding of what sex is, of course, lesbian couples are going to lose. Researchers like Marianne Brand and later Esther Rothblum re-examined the data and found that when you measure relationship satisfaction, emotional intimacy, and sexual satisfaction on their own terms, lesbian couples often scored higher than heterosexual couples, not lower. Mic drop. Boom.
Mic. Okay.
Now talk to me.
Okay. I have so many thoughts, Deanna, and this plays perfectly into my whole theory on this. Okay, so I have an argument for taking back the term lesbian bed death, but in a really empowering way for us queer women. Okay?
Okay.
First of all, when you are in a lesbian relationship, this all plays so well. When you are in a lesbian relationship, meaning you are two people who identify as female, you have estrogen, you might have ovaries, you might have a uterus. Okay, right? I'm talking the whole umbrella, right?
Yes.
You understand cycles in a body. You understand what cycles do to you, both emotionally and physically. You understand that you have cycles that do things to you. You also understand, because you have the same kind of bodies, possibly, right, that your partner also has cycles that do things to them, both emotionally and physically.
Yeah.
That's one part of this, right?
Yeah.
You also are most likely, very, very highly likely, an individual who very much understands consent. And you also very highly, I'm pretty sure, very much understand what it feels like when somebody coerces you into something or forces something on you when you did not give consent. Am I right? Can I get an amen, Deanna?
Amen.
Thank you. So, when you are in a relationship like this, when you understand cycles and what they do to your body, you understand consent. Sometimes our cycles do not match up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, and one more thing to add to this. As you age, there's one thing we can agree on in life, and I think all of us universally, is that change is inevitable. Our bodies change. We are not the same body as we were in our 20s, as we are in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and on. Our bodies change. Our libidos change. The yeah. stuff that works there, everything changes. And I'm actually in this perimenopause world where I'm like, oh my God, stuff is yeah. really changing here.
Yeah.
So, okay. As you go on in these relationships and your cycles don't add up, from the start, I think, lesbians are more likely to hold back on sex if their partner is not in the mood. Let's be real, because we're not going to push our partner to have sex and fake it for us. If there's one thing I always say about our relationships, queer relationships in general, if babies were made based on the quality of sex, we would have so many more babies than our non-queer counterparts. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Because there's no faking going on here. If our partner's not in the mood, we're not doing it then. I don't want you just like here half-ass, but I think a lot of straight men don't mind. Sorry if there's straight yeah. men listening. Let's be real. They just yeah. need the body to do the thing, right? Yeah. And I've yeah. spoken to many of my straight friends who have corroborated in this fact, right?
Yeah.
They're okay with, okay, you're not in the mood, but let's just do it anyway. We don't do that, or very few yeah. of us do that. Yeah. I am not going to have my wife lay lifeless and get my shit off. Like, that's not even the way to put it. But do you know what I'm
yeah.
saying? Like,
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
We don't fake it. And so, yes, there is an ebb and flow in lesbian relationships that may account for less of the sexy time, but that does not mean we do not have an amazing amount of intimacy. It does not mean the love dies. I'm not talking about death of the relationship. I am talking about lesbian bed death as it pertains to how our relationships work. It's the ebb and flow of a relationship, especially over time. I'm talking 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. There's an ebb and flow there, and cycles change. There might be longer periods of time when our cycles are not lining up. And maybe intimacy does start to look different, but it doesn't mean it is not as deep and beautiful. To be clear, I am still, and we've talked about this, I am still so in love with my wife. And I think she's the sexiest woman on the planet. I think she's the hottest woman in the room, no matter what, right? And we are still intimate, but it just looks different yeah. over time. And yeah. I think that's true from the beginning of a lesbian relationship because of yeah. my point about cycles and understanding consent and yeah. and our level of compassion and being able to understand what our partners feel.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is my argument to take back, like how we took back queer, like how we took back lesbian, right? Take back lesbian bed death as something that's empowering for us, because it's kind of badass that we listen to our spouses and give them body autonomy. What a crazy concept. So lesbian bed death as it pertains to bodily autonomy. Thank you. Thank you.
Beautifully said. I have no notes. No notes, except I love what you mentioned about different forms of intimacy.
Yes.
And I think that's something that doesn't happen always in heterosexual relationships, where like intimacy is sex. And I think even if we're not actively having sex, we are intimate in so many other ways mm-hmm. as lesbians mm-hmm. that also like counts to us as it's not sex, but it counts as intimacy and on the same playing field as sex does. And mm-hmm. so a lot of times, even if we're not intimate in that way, we're intimate in so many other ways that it's like, that's not the only place. Sex isn't the only place that we're getting that intimacy from our partners. And so that also plays into why it's like, maybe can be not as frequent. There's a lot of reasons, like you touched on, but can be not as frequent because we're intimate in so many other aspects of our relationship. Like, I feel like there's an emotional depth. There's like all these other layers of depth that I think are happening that we're meeting each other in very intimate ways in a lot of aspects of our relationship that isn't just physical, which doesn't always happen in hetero relationships.
100. So, not to judge and not to say that this is not, we're not saying all hetero relationships.
No. And not that it can't, but like historically, like if there's something that I've heard on other podcasts and have heard other women say is that they struggled to figure out that they were queer because all the other girls around them in high school were also talking about how much they hated their boyfriends or hated men and da da da, and they were straight. And so exactly. There's just this conversation, even within straight circles or around straight men, like straight women, of hating men, of like not wanting to be with them, da 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 da, to the point where it's almost confusing for lesbians to figure out that they're even a lesbian because yeah. It's like, oh, so we all out here don't want to be having sex with men or not intimate right. with our boyfriends, you know? So it's like, it's not point. Even to say, you know, as lesbians, we're man-hating or we're making this up. It's just like, it's what we've heard as women from other straight women. It's in the ether. It's in the conversation.
My straight friends are always complaining about their husbands. I complain about my wife, too, to a certain extent, but not the same thing.
It's a
different vibe. And so, like, and I can understand this whole argument that this whole thing was made up under a heteronormative lens, which is gross and wrong. But I think that's all the more reason for an argument to take it back and to make it an empowering term for us. It sounds terrible, lesbian bed death, but if we can, like the word queer doesn't sound pretty either, but we love it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. I love it.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. I'm not saying we need to go around telling everybody, well, I'm in lesbian bed death mode. Like, I'm not saying that, but like, I'm having LBD this week, but like.
I mean, it is. I think there is something to be said about transparency. I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but there is we were just talking about her, this queer sex therapist that we both follow on Instagram. And I heard her interview on another podcast and she was like, when you talk to other queer couples about intimacy and things like that, like it can do one of two things where it's like you've now comparing yourself if you hear this other couple's having sex four times a week and you're right. like, we're not doing that. But it also opens up the door for like to kind of take the veil off with some of these topics and be like, what are y'all doing? What are we doing? How does it look different? Oh, they're also not as maybe physically intimate or having sex as much in the same way that we're not. And it kind of can take out the shame that can kind of come, because even when you come out as queer or as lesbian, I think you still can carry a lot of those things that were instilled in you when you were identifying as straight and functioning in a heteronormative world, of like the shame around, oh my God, we're not having sex enough, or I'm not being intimate enough with my partner, or all of these things, because that's what you were feeling, like this kind of pressure when you were with a man. And so I think there is a bit of like deconstructing that has to happen and it takes a while to happen. Like, I think even now I've been out for a long time and can still kind of feel that with my partner sometime of like this worry of like, oh, it's not enough, even though that's not what she's thinking at all.
Right. Yeah, I hear that. That's a good point. And also on the note of shame, there was one comment from one of the young whippersnappers who who said maybe the Gen X lesbians are experiencing LBD because of all their internalized homophobia, and we don't have that. And I think that I understand that. I hear that argument. And yes, you are correct. Us Gen Xers and older do carry a good amount of internalized homophobia because we grew up in a very different time. I do think that the youngins still do also have internalized homophobia because it's still very much there. However, it's a valid argument, and I don't think that that's what it is. There may be some gay people who have a hard time having sex because of their internalized homophobia. I think that is a thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's what is meant by LBD.
Yeah. No.
LBD is like, it's like it drops off a little bit. It ebbs and flows in my mind, right? Like, because most of us start very passionately. Let's be real, right? Like and as relationships do, they start with a lot of passion. And I would say if there's not passion in the beginning of the relationship, I think personal, like for me, passion is everything. It means everything. I need passion and then I need the rest.
Yes. Yes. Wow. So I do really want to quickly touch on this article, too. And I think it frames it different. It talks about lesbian bed death, but in a different way. It says the title of the article, and it's on Autostraddle if you want to check it out. What if all of my lesbian bed death means I'm not a lesbian? So the question is, would a real lesbian have this much lesbian bed death? Which, right off the bat, kind of pisses me off now that we've just talked about the history of the term lesbian bed death coming from a heteronormative framework and heteronormative research. So it's like this person who has identified as a lesbian is questioning their sexuality based off of this research that wasn't even done in a queer way. So anyway.
Yeah, this heteronormative idea of how frequent sex should be. Like, and what its sex is. Exactly. Well, and I think that whole, I say fuck that argument.
Yeah. But let me read it.
And
so
maybe
it says,
you're not gay. I don't know.
Well, okay. It says, I've been out for 15 years. It's a long time.
That's a long time.
I've been out for 15 years. I feel really solid in my lesbian identity, but I can't seem to keep the sex going in my lesbian relationships in the same way I could with men. And after my most recent breakup, I've started questioning everything. My third relationship ended after a period of bed death, not total death, but where it would be monthly or every few months.
Oh my God.
I never had bed death with men. They always initiated, which is one thing, but it's also easy and straightforward to get men off. We could do 15 minutes before bed, but with women, it's more of an event, so it's harder to make time for. With women, even though my attraction and interest remains, my appetite for a lot of actual sex always fades. I still watch straight porn too. However, I don't like men and I do not want to be in a relationship with a man. I love lesbians and feel like the queer people are my people. But, like, what if I'm not one after all? Has anyone else experienced this? My last girlfriend was pissed at me for days when I admitted that I had sex daily with my college boyfriend, since we'd never had a daily sex phase. But that sex took 10 minutes sometimes. Okay.
All right. Well, thoughts? I think this, initially, like this, in my mind, this plays right into my argument about lesbian sex and the differences and the cycles and the things. And I didn't bring up the point that it is kind of a fact that exactly what this person said, men want it more, men initiate more, but it kind of plays into my whole consent thing. And maybe this person is a person who's always up and ready to go, which, you know, that's awesome. I still think this really actually like illustrates my argument yet again. Like, you're looking through a heteronormative lens at what a sex life should look like. And so if you need a sex life that includes getting a penis inside of you every day, then perhaps you're not gay. Maybe you're bi. Like, maybe you're pan. Like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe your identity is a little different.
It doesn't even seem like she's trying to say, like, that's what she'd prefer. But I think it seems like that's all she has to compare it to. Mm-hmm. And I think my take on this would be your body might just feel like safe enough in these queer relationships to not feel like that pressure to have sex all the time, to take it back to what you said about consent, where it's like with men, it was happening daily because they were always initiating and you didn't maybe feel like you could say no. And so you were just kind of going through the motions, where it's like, you're comfortable in this relationship. You're still attracted to this person, like you said. You still love this person, but you're not feeling this desire to have sex all the time. Maybe you actually have a lower libido and you weren't able to like realize that because you were having sex even when you didn't want to with a man, versus in these relationships, you're still attracted to your partner and you're probably intimate in other ways that aren't sex, but you're not wanting to have sex as frequently, and that like that being okay. And it does make me, like I said at the beginning, it makes me a little sad to be like, for her to be like questioning her whole sexuality as someone who's been out for 15 years based off of this like heteronormative idea of how frequent sex should be happening, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do a little bit of shame on her partner for, because at the end she says,
She gets
my last girlfriend was pissed at me for days when I admitted that I'd had sex daily with my college boyfriend since we'd never had a daily sex phase. A little bit of shame on that partner because it reinforces that like
heteronormative
idea of like how frequent sex should be. And it shouldn't be like my partner was pissed at me. It should be a conversation of like, well, what do you need? How can I help you become comfortable? What do you want? You know what I mean? Like that should have been the conversation.
Right.
But
spoken like a true lesbian, Deani.
I mean, what can I say? My girlfriend's also a really great communicator and it helps a lot.
Amazing.
So it's like, it's yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we need to take back LBD and make it an empowering thing so that all these youngins don't come at me when I talk about LBD. Like, come on, youngins, you need to stop looking through the heteronormative lens of what we're talking about here and use your queer lens and make it empowering. Take it back. Take it back. Take it back, Brad. Take back what you said about Thor. You don't know that. You don't know
I
it.
I don't know that.
God, my Gen X lesbians in here, you know it. You know it. It's know. Adventures in Babysitting. Have you seen it, Deani?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God, Deani. Movie
Jamie,
night.
I'm sorry.
I have made it my mission to show my young daughter the classics that I grew up on. This is one of them. She's seen it. You need to see it. I think of you as a daughter. You need to see it. Adventures in Babysitting. You will have a crush on Elizabeth Shue. Perhaps. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Possibly.
I did. Because she does a fun dancing scene in the beginning. It's really wonderful. All right.
Well, this was a great episode. I'm really glad we dug into this. I hope you found this entertaining. I hope you found it helpful. I hope you found it informative. And yeah, this is a good episode. I like
LBD.
This.
LBD, take it back. I'm going to put a quote. I'm going to make a shirt. Take back LBD.
No one's going to know what that means. But
yeah, I know. Take care of LBD. Suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Take care of LBD. Hey!
I'm dead.
Okay, that was awesome. Tune in next time.
Bye! Love is love is love on the
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love. All right, folks, if you enjoyed this week's Tea Time, this is exactly the kind of conversation that you're going to find here. These are the conversations that don't make it into the regular show. Sometimes I'm going to be laughing until I cry. Sometimes I'm going to be talking about one of the hardest things I've lived through. But it will always be real. It will always be candid. It will sometimes include a friend, and it will sometimes be just me chatting with you. And starting in August, Tea Time is going to become a subscriber exclusive. So if you'd like to keep hanging out with me each week and also support the Queer Family Podcast while you're at it, I would absolutely love to have you. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. And if you like what you're hearing, go ahead and hit that subscriber link or go to Patreon and subscribe there. I'll be looking for you.